Welcome back to Silver Screen Social, listeners. I'm your host, Jackson Vickery, and on this episode, I spoke to costume designer Wendy Chuck about her work on The Holdovers. Chuck has collaborated with some of the film industry's most celebrated talents, including Alexander Payne, Tom McCarthy, Jack Nicholson, George Clooney, Robert Redford, Jane Fonda, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and Jane Campion. Her alchemy with fabric, texture, pattern, and color have brought life to a diverse range of characters on screen. Please enjoy this clip of The Holdovers before we begin.
There's Mary. Can you not tell Mary or anybody about...
Entrenou. This whole goddamn trip is Entrenou. Stand up.
What?
Stand up for the lady, you boor. Cretin.
Mary?
Well, hello.
Hi. Hello. Sorry I'm late.
No, we're just happy to see you.
Madame, your menu?
Oh, thank you. Hello, ma'am. Would you like a cocktail to start?
Oh, no, I'll just take a cup of tea.
Oh, come on, have a cocktail.
No, a cup of tea is fine. I've eaten already.
And you, gentlemen, did you save room for dessert?
Yeah, what's that?
That's our signature dessert, Cherry's Jubilee. Mm.
Sounds great. Bring the young vandal here, Cherry's Jubilee.
I'm afraid I can't. The dish contains brandy. Same deal with the Bananas Foster.
Yeah, but doesn't the alcohol just burn off?
Mm. It's still against the rules, ma'am.
Fine. Oh. I'll order the Cherry's Jubilee. We can share it.
I can't allow that either.
Can we say it's his birthday?
It's my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, young man. Let's get you a slice of cake or some other age-appropriate dessert.
Christ on a crutch. What kind of a fascist hash foundry are you running here?
Excuse me, ma'am. Do you by chance have cherries?
Yes.
Great. And do you have ice cream?
Yes.
Fantastic. Can we please get cherries and ice cream to go?
And the check.
Right away.
Bitch.
And James Beam.
All right.
Oh! Presto, Cherry's Jubilee.
Ooh. Shouldn't it just go out?
Shit.
How much alcohol did you put on there?
It's very odd.
I'm just curious for you if there has been a character in one of his films that has really sort of tugged at your heartstrings and sort of either placed a mirror on yourself in terms of someone who is close to you in your life, or maybe someone like you that you just kind of can't stop thinking about or can't stop looking away from or continue to look back and get lessons from. Because I'll always think of June Squibb and I'll go right to my grandma, and it's just the second I see her, I'm like, I understand her, and I have to think of her that way, and it brings a lot of clarity to my head once I'm able to do that.
The first one that pops into my head is Jack Nicholson and About Schmidt, because he was my dad. And I think it was Alexander's love letter to his dad as well. Mm-hmm. And we identified very strongly with that character as our, you know, we watched, well, I'll just tell personally, I mean, as I watched my dad go from, you know, a very vibrant working man. He was the manager of a company and well respected. And he kept working, I think, pretty late, probably till he was 70, maybe even beyond that. But I saw him do that life transition as I myself was, you know, probably a teenager at that point and going through all my teenage stuff, and he just like stayed the course there and was there for me. So yes, I think that was the one big character that I identified my own life or paralleled my own life with. I'm just trying to think of, you know, I think that translated also into Nebraska and Bruce Dern's character there. And then I think we all have a bit of Angus in us too from the holdovers, don't we? I mean, were you an upstart at school or, you know, family stuff was happening and you just wanted to lash out or, you know, life just got to you and you, you know, didn't know how to just contain your emotions or your reactions to things. You know, it's a very reactionary time. So I feel like, you know, there's more than a bit of Angus in all of us probably, because it's just teen angst encapsulated. Mm-hmm. Although we don't have the influence of contemporary world like social media, et cetera. So I think it's also great to be stripped away from that. And kind of Angus is, I realized that, you know, I was an early teen in 1970 myself. So this is kind of my era. And even though I was raised in a different country, you know, a lot of things translate to, I mean, the human condition translates all over.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? I think they're the standouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it fascinates me just to, I don't know. It's, I'll probably ask that question now yeah. too.
Oh, I have to think of another one. Jack and Miles in Sideways. So, like, don't we all have a friend like Jack, like whose eyes are diverted from other things? You know, he can't stay the course. He's about to get married, but he still has a wandering eye and kind of fakes his way through life in you know a very grand way. You know, I think we all have a friend like that, and we all have some Miles in us too. I mean, I think all these characters are universal. And they're all mirrors of the human condition, which is just so attractive about the work with him is, you know, we're telling real, this is real human storytelling, which is what's gone on for, you know, millennial, like hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah. So
that's how we communicate is through storytelling around the campfire. So in these stories, I think that Alexander tells are of our human condition and how complicated and simple it can be.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating that you say that because I was having a chat with someone and they basically were like, if I was able to spend 3.5 hours with any person in the world, I could be able to create a movie on each person in the world because I think, and if I was able to ask you your deepest, darkest secrets and fantasies and whatnot, there's a story to tell on each person. And I think that's, I hadn't really thought about it. I mean, in some weird way, I'd probably thought about it before, but the way that they put it, it's like, if you really just strip down a person just to their rawest form, and really understand them, you can get a story out of anyone. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so evident in Alexander's work. And I think that's so evident in The Holdovers because they are such, I don't want to say simplistic people because they are flawed and complicated mm-hmm. and multifaceted, but they yeah. are very everyday, ordinary people. But within their story, it just is this, I don't know, there's something extraordinary in everyone that you never really reach the tip of until you start, I don't know, chiseling away at it. And I think that's just what I appreciate so much about Alexander. Yeah.
And to be able to laugh at yourself too, I mean, it's done with, you know, it's tragic comic in a way. I mean, some some works are less tragic than others, and I think this is not tragic. It's slightly tragic. I mean, sad, definitely sad, but also, you know, there's humor because you see all those aspects in yourself, like the need to run away, the fight or flight response, the pain and agony of connection or joy of connection, or, you know, that time of year, which is just such a heightened awareness of connectivity with others and family. And yes, and if you don't have family, you know, it can be a dark hole for a lot of people. It could be like the highlight of the year for others. Or whatever your perspective is.
No, absolutely. And I loved reading this about you for this particular film, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but this is your first period film with Alexander, correct? And you were you were very excited to take on this challenge. Can you tell me why that is?
I think all costume designers like to do period films. It's just, in one way, it stretches your wings. In another way, just, I can't explain why. I guess just because it stretches you, and, you know, you get out of your comfort zone, and you learn about, well, I mean, if you've gone to school or design school, you know, contemporary world is very limiting. So being able to dive deeper into past lives, past eras is, you know, it just stretches you creatively. So, yes, and I felt like I knew this period because I grew up in it as well, but just being able to dive deeper into research was, you know, it's a really fun part that I love to do. And I had a great assistant, Chandra Chavez, who is a really great researcher. And she'd find, you know, the oddest photographs and references that I couldn't find just by a regular search. So all of that, like, investigative reporting in a way, or anthropology, just really interests me. And especially working with Alexander, because you really keep looking for what's real and what's authentic. And it's not only about finding something that works for the character and works in the movie and works in the overarching color palette, et cetera, and works into the locations. It's just finding the, you know, who would wear that? How would they wear that? Like, where did they wear that? Like, answering all those questions. And you know, where did they shop? Why does Paul Hunnam have just that coat and nothing else? I mean, why does he wear the same coat all the time? And where did he shop? So that, you know, it prompts you to ask all those questions. Of, you know, and fortunately, you know, 70s is not too far away that people remember. There's still lots of reference. There's still actual clothes that living, I think, because there's clothes that go to die places. Yeah. And you can't revive them for modern bodies as well. So they get marks from sitting on a hanger in a rental house for too long. They get moth holes. So there's the great challenge of hunting and gathering, I call it, for the right things. So, and that in particular was a huge challenge on this one, because there's no rental houses in Boston. So the nearest rental house is three and a half hours away in Albany, or you go to New York.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought we pulled a lot of stuff from LA before we left. And it turns out that was just the tiny tip of the iceberg, that we needed so many more things, because we ended up having a lot of background and, you know, they kept coming. Yeah. I think it's not the real, it is a period piece, but it's not the, I think we could do something else that's even more period, that's maybe not as, because you can still find, be good to do like a whole period film. I feel like this was like three quarters of a period film for me, because some of it is so contemporary that you can still get it, and that worked to my advantage. So, you know, the 70s was back in the stores when we were shopping. So I was able to, and I sorry, claim 70s, but really I was working with a late 60s look, because, you know, it was 1970, but still, you know, fashion takes a while to catch up. And, you know, in a collegiate world, it's not really fashion. So it's kind of like a different look. At least that's how I rooted those, the college. And that way, but yeah, I'd like to do something with him, like set in the 20s to 40s. But I don't know. I don't know what he's got in mind for the future. I know about a couple of things, but which are also very exciting. But we'll wait and see.
Yes.
Sign up. Yeah.
One dress in particular that stood out for me, and I would love to hear the backstory that you made for this particular dress, because Mary just sort of stole my heart with this entire film, which I think most people are agreeing with. But it's the dress she wears to the Christmas party, and I'm wondering what backstory you gave her for that, because I can see so many instances of where she either has worn that before to something special, was waiting to wear that for something for when her son returned home but was not able to. So I'm curious what story you gave them, because I, when she is sort of lounging back on the record player and just sort of having her little cocktail and just sort of spinning the record herself, I was transfixed by her, and I was just so taken aback by that dress. And I'm just so curious what backstory you gave her for that. And where you ended up finding that.
Great question. Thank you for acknowledging that. I sweated. That was the last outfit that I had to, it could have been the last outfit I had to establish for her. Either way, I sweated on that dress for so long. It was, of course, I couldn't find anything. So then I had to build it. But I did know that it had to be navy blue. First, like, just, it was, you know, I think it's flattering color on her. It had to be something like we hadn't seen her in before. It had to be flattering on her body. And I worked with Divine. We went back and forth with some ideas, and we tried something with more flourish, with a little more frill, or and it just wasn't working. To me, it was a distraction from the scene. So that's why I just went with a very clean, streamlined look that was flattering on her. And look, it may not be totally authentic period-wise. It's close to it. But it was just a style that worked on her. And I often find, like, stripping things down, it just allowed her to be that expressive. Because I feel like any other detail, even now I look at it, I think, oh, that necklace is a bit distracting. Like, I probably should have toned that down a bit. That happens 99% of the time when you review your work and you see it on the big screen. But I think the neckline is flattering on her. Again, it's like she stepped out of her work mode. She's attempting to find her joy, and then gets reminded of, you know, what you know, the hole in her heart is, you know, is just so big that she just breaks down. And there was also a moment where I looked at the frame as they were rehearsing. I went, oh no, they're both in navy blue. Oh, is that a bad thing? And then I thought, no, they're in simpatico. So Angus and her are in the same color. And then I decided, like, that's okay. That's okay. And I'll speak to another incident of when something like that happened. The three of them were watching TV, and Angus is sitting in the background reading a book.
Mm.
He's in a pumpkin-colored sweater. He's also in a pumpkin-colored chair. And, you know, I looked at that as we were rehearsing. I went to Alexandra. I said, is that you realize, should I change him? You realize he's blending into the chair. And Alexandra said, no, I love it. It's fine. Leave it. So, I mean, it kind of works for the scene, really, ultimately, when you look at it all pieced together. Like, he's there. He's like the quiet voice in the background. But at that point in time, he's kind of blending into the furniture. So he's starting to belong there and relax. I realized I'm happy with the dress in the end, with Divine's dress. Yeah.
No, it's fabulous. Indeed. And if you don't mind, can I just go maybe 3 minutes over our allotted time?
Oh, yeah, I have time.
Okay, just wanted to make sure, because I did want to ask about one more dress that she wears that I think is just absolutely sensational. And it is at the dinner in Boston where she meets Paul and Dominique's character out for dinner.
Yeah.
And it's just striking to see in that sort of 70s-esque restaurant that, you know, has been there probably since the 30s or 40s or whatever. Yeah. But then you go outside and you see them create this handmade dessert. And I'm curious, why did she pack that particular dress to go to Boston when she's visiting her family? And maybe she knows she's going to dinner, but I'm just curious why that dress?
Well, that was a blouse and a skirt. Mm. And the skirt we made, and the blouse was, I think that was a purchase. Why that choice? Well, see, sometimes you try and figure out the backstory, and sometimes you just have to go with what looks good on camera for the scene. You know, of all the figuring outs, I think that's one I didn't think of. I was just more conscious of the tone of the scene. And that pink is so pretty on her. It's so, again, it's very simpatico. I think it like paints her as, you know, very soft and pretty and feminine in that particular scene. And she's a kind of like the third wheel to that conversation of, you know, exposing, you know, Angus is, you know, his deep thought, his deep reality. And she comes in with a little, you know, feminine energy there.
Mm.
So usually I do think about what people pack in their bags, and, you know, how big's the bag? You know, go to the props department and find out how big is the bag, how many things would they fit in, and And but it could have been her, you know, her Christmas. Oh no, it wasn't Christmas Day. No. Her New Year dress. She thought she was going to have a New
Yeah.
Year party with her sisters. There you go.
I think you just did such a knockout job with her. She's just I know she'll just be one of those sort of characters I sort of put on the Alexander Payne shelf that I have for myself that I don't know. She just always will stand out to me in so many different ways. But to round things out, what do you take away from this film and just sort of add to your tool belt per se?
Well, I guess you know the success of the movie in general. I mean, the really great feedback from everybody, you know, that's always, you know, pat on the back for a job well done, or you know, a stressful job that had, you know, gives you reason for all that stress in a way. Like, oh, I worked all those days. I was, you know, in the bitter cold for months, and you know, trying to make things happen, and you know, driving long distances in the dark and in the snow, and nearly wiping myself out on a, you know, when we're in Western Massachusetts. So all of those things, kind of, you know, when your movie has some notoriety, it makes you feel that you did all those, you made those sacrifices for a reason. You know, it wasn't just because you know, you could make all those sacrifices and a movie will never be seen. So having made those sacrifices and, you know, people seeing it, acknowledging, you know, having discussions and people actually, you know, noting things is very rewarding, I have to say. Yeah, having a period film on my resume, great. Yep, bring on more. Working with Alexander again, yes. And you know, the whole, you know, emotional arc of the story, it just or the subject just makes me happy. The human interest story like this makes me happy. Like it's a movie I would go and see. So it's that's also a bonus, you know, work on movies that you want to see. And at least I have that with Alexander. I mean, it's not always the case. I mean, sometimes you just got to take things because you need a job, not because you love what you're going to work on. But I mean, you know, that to me is the idea of success, if you get to work on things that you resonate with and you love, because then you bring your own joy into the job, which is not an easy one.
Absolutely. And I yearn for those movies. More human centric, human interest story based.
But then we might get bored with those and want something else. But
That's true. I guess that it could go out of style.
yeah, but there was a time when all there was the, you know, the universe, etc., where there was, you know, it's all big and shoot 'em up. So yeah, this is more my speed.
Yep, I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
But Wendy, this has just been such a pleasure to chat with you today.
You too. You're a
You're so
super
lovely.
fan.
I love that. I cannot express how much I just adore this film and how much I adore Alexander and his work and your work. It's gotten me through many a tough time and many a good time, and this was a good time. So I'm grateful to have seen it and to have been able to speak with you about it, because it really does mean a great deal.